Hello and welcome to episode 30 of The Offline Gamer. I'm Matt.
And I'm Ray.
And this is our UK Games Expo 2018 review show.
Woo!
And as well as myself and Ray, we are joined by a third person, as we were in our UKG 2017 review. It's Gareth. Hello, Gareth.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be back. It feels like a whole year since I was last year.
For those who don't know Gareth, he's a colleague of ours who we work with, and he is also obsessed with board games, and you probably heard us mention him a few times because we mentioned about your obsession with miniature games, Gareth.
That is completely correct. I'm a little bit obsessed with miniature-based games, that's correct.
And also, just to check whether he's listening, just name-drop him every now and then.
Yeah, that's true.
That's also true.
Okay, so we're here to talk about UKG 2018. We are recording this on Tuesday evening, so it's been just over 48 hours since the show ended. And we saw a lot, and I think we've got a lot to talk about. And we've also got a few interviews with a few people that we managed to cajole into having a microphone shoved in their face during the event. So we'll get to those as we talk about everyone's games. Before we go into the individual games, shall we talk a little bit about the event itself? What did we think of it? Was it an improvement on last year? Was it any worse?
I don't think it was any worse. I think it was an improvement on last year because there was a lot more space.
Yeah.
Yeah, that helped a lot.
Yeah, because last year, sometimes just going up and down, like the avenues, I suppose, was a bit of a bun fight, whereas this year, I think there were only one or two moments where I had to sort of like squeeze and sort of collapse in on myself to try and get through a bunch of people. And that was usually caused by a traffic jam of pushchairs.
Oh, yeah.
There were a couple of pushchairs I spotted. A couple of those sat trucks as well. A few people were moving them around, which I thought was pretty hard to move around, but they weren't too bad. And the avenues were definitely wider. Having the second hall made an awful lot of difference as well. I think it opened it up a lot more because there were more people this year as well. When they were, it was clearly busier on the Friday when I got there.
Oh, yeah. I think the fact that it was half term as well, you probably got quite a few more people on the Friday who would normally only have been able to come at the weekend.
Mm, yeah.
Because their kids were off school on the Friday, so why not take them to the NEC?
Mm, absolutely. And go and geek out for the day. I don't blame them in the slightest. Yeah.
Attendance was up on last year. I think it was, what, about 15,000, 16,000 last year? It was over 20 this year.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
Yesterday, so yeah. So that extra space was definitely needed.
Oh, yeah. I think, I don't know whether it helped or not, but it was also Collectomania literally next door. So I imagine, I don't know, some people are the sort of people who go for one show and then go, oh, that looks interesting, and then end up doing two shows at once.
Yeah, it does annoy me, though, because, I mean, I'm the type of person who would traditionally go to Collectomania. I've been to Collectomania in Milton Keynes a few times, and obviously I go to Comic Con at the NEC, so that's the type of show that I would gladly spend 2 days in there as well. So it's
oh yeah,
for me it's not ideal, because, you know, I mean, I'd rather go to UKG, that's fair enough, but if there was someone at Collectomania I wanted to meet and get a autograph or a picture with, then that would obviously be a bit awkward. But
oh yeah, Mads Mikkelsen was there.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
I was quite annoyed because that's someone I would have liked to meet and get an autograph from.
Yeah.
And I was very sort of annoyed. I think it was on Saturday when we were on the way back to the car park, there was a chap in front of us who was saying he nipped out for a cigarette out one of the side doors.
Yeah.
And it happened to be the same place where all the, like, I don't know, stars were that were at Collectomania, and he just had a 15-minute chat over a cigarette with Mads Mikkelsen. I was like, damn you.
That's the kind of story you always say in the pub, isn't it? And you always think, it never happens to me.
So is the moral of this story, start smoking and you can meet famous people?
As an ex-smoker, I must say, you do meet some interesting people when you're out having a fag. You really do, but I never met anyone that famous.
Yeah, and then on Sunday, there was a girl behind us in the queue for the bus back to the car park who had a picture with Mads Mikkelsen and was waving it around, and I was like, I want to punch you.
Were you sitting there thinking, can I take you and can I take your picture?
Yeah, but then I don't want a picture of her and Mads Mikkelsen.
Ah.
Yeah.
I'd rather just, like, have an autograph or something.
Okay, but that's fair enough.
I was tempted to sort of check the prices for Collectomania and maybe see if we could sneak in there at any point, but it was just, there was so much to do at UKG.
Yeah.
Mm.
It wasn't going to happen.
Plus, you'd also had to pay to see him, I would have thought, as well, which would be cheap.
Yeah. No. Never mind.
But I thought UKG was really good this year. I thought it was slightly bigger. There was overall, I think, probably I had a really good day. But I mean, my time was quite limited. Obviously, I could only go for the one day officially. But there seemed to be an awful lot there, which is cool. I thought it was good. Enjoyed it.
Okay. So consensus is the halls and the size and everything was good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the bring and buy. That's always a slightly controversial subject because some people love it, some people hate it. We had a bit of a queue to get in, didn't we? We were queuing for what did it end up being? Just shy of 30 minutes? I can't remember now, but...
Yeah, I think it was maybe 35, because you didn't start the time until we'd already been in it about 5-10 minutes.
We just opened the app on my phone, see if it's still there. 30 minutes and 58 seconds I recorded, but we were there for a couple of minutes before I started it, so yeah.
Wow, it's a long time, isn't it? I mean, I walked past the bring and buy probably 3 or 4 times throughout throughout the day on Friday. Got there quite early to look around, and it was already easily 150 people deep when I looked at it early on Friday morning. Yeah. And then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, when I'd been around quite a lot of the stalls and I was looking around, I thought, oh, I'll just give it another go. Wandered over, still 150 people deep. I thought, you know what, I just don't have the time to waste today. I didn't even get in there this year, which is a shame because I quite like coming and poke around, you know?
Yeah, there was a copy of Hero Quest there on the Saturday when we had a look around, and it had £75 price tag on it, which, if it was a complete copy, is a bargain, you know, because it goes on eBay for over £100 these days.
Mm.
But that's the problem. There was nowhere for you to check if it's complete. You just have to accept that the person who's put it in there is genuine, you know, and at that kind of money, you're not going to do that. I mean, I bought one game, which was that Russian roulette card game from the guy who wrote Borderlands, and that was only £10, and that is missing a single card. Now, it's not going to be an issue, but, you know, it was sold as complete, so...
Mm. I mean, you know, speaking about Hero Quest, I mean, I might have told you before, but I bought a copy of Space Crusade in there the first year I went, and it was just basically a box full of spare parts. And it was annoying because, I mean, thankfully I got the money back. They were good about it; they gave me the money back. But I think it definitely coloured my impression last year. I didn't buy anything to bring and buy because every time I picked something up and looked at it, I thought, I have no way of knowing if this is complete.
And
it is annoying to get home and realise that you've got bits missing. You're going to have to contact the game publishers. Some of them are really nice about it and they'll give you the bits. Some of them just ignore you and the game is effectively broken. And you know, if you're a nice person, you're a decent person, you're not saying that these people are horrible human beings, but if you're a moral person, you wouldn't do that to somebody else. You're stuck with a game you can't play, which is it's a real shame because I think there's a good community in the board gaming community. People are really friendly and they're very welcoming and very accepting, and there's some people who just don't seem to get that at all, which is quite frustrating.
Yeah, what put me off is the same as what put me off every year that we've gone in there, the fact that it's so busy and crammed in there. Like, everywhere else had way more space, but the bring and buy was the same size that it always is. And it's absolutely heaving with people. Nobody's moving. Everybody's pushing and leaning over you and, like, pressing against you. And it just, like, just sort of standing there waiting for the line to shuffle down the big table. And you're sitting there going, why are we not moving? And it just, it brought on the sort of edges of panic attack time for me. So I did just sort of go, nope, and start just walking around and pushing people out of the way and stuff. But it's, there's so many things that could be improved about it. So I hope that, like, maybe next year it will be in a larger space and the cats come to visit me at the microphone. So if you get some weird brushing noises, you'll probably have brushed on it like that.
I mean, I think the There were some positives from what I could see from where the Bring and Buy was situated this year. It wasn't in the main hall anymore. It had its own space. So that was good. It didn't take away from the trade hall and the main in hall one, which I thought was nice. It did separate that queue of people, which, you know, obviously took a lot of space last year and the year before. It was in its own area. And I think that was good. Fair play to them for doing that. They obviously listened to complaints and concerns and upsets, and they have moved it to a place where it's, you know, out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I suppose for me, it's just every time. Well, another thing I found last year, and apparently it was the same this year, was most games in there weren't priced competitively for a second-hand game. A lot of them were, you know, £2 or £3 less than you could buy new from in the shop. And honestly, it's brand new and sealed. Why would you? You know what I mean? For the couple of quid, you wouldn't take the risk.
That was because I saw a copy of Carcosa in there, and it was only £3 less than they were selling it from the One Free Elephant stand. And I thought, for £3, it's not really worth risking that there's stuff missing.
Mm.
And the other thing was, so much of the stuff in there was, like, overpriced for second hand. And the other thing was, there was loads of things in there that were sealed, brand new games that were being sold out on the sales floor. And I'm like, well, why would I give money to some randomer when I could just go give it to the people who made the game? Like, in, like, 5 minutes walk away, if that. I didn't understand why people were trying to sell second-hand, brand-new games still in the cellophane for games that were there out in the show.
So let's move on, and let's talk about the live entertainment. You didn't go to any shows this year, did you, Gareth?
No, I didn't get a chance. I've never been to any of the live shows at UKG, I'm quite upset about it, because I never seem to get a chance. Next year is going to be my year, I think.
Okay. Well, we went to two shows on the Friday. We cut down from last year, because last year we went to, like, 5 shows or something like that.
Yeah, it was such a rush.
It was insane. You know, we'd have a meeting with someone, and then we'd have to go, oh, we've got to cut this short, because now we've got to sprint over to the Hilton for a show. So we settled on two. On Friday, one was Nightmare Live, which was at 12:30 on Friday, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then Pandemic Live in the evening, which was at 6:30. So let's talk about Nightmare first. Obviously, I've dragged you into this for 2 years in a row now. What did you think of this one compared to last year?
I think this one was, I think I liked some of the characters a bit more that came up.
Yeah.
The talking wall demon, that was in this year's one. I liked that he was quite funny. And the dragon, they've changed from being a massive dragon, just its head, to being like a handheld floating dragon. Still exceedingly loud dragon. I was, because now that I've seen it before, I sort of know a bit more about it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Did that help that you'd gone to it last year?
Because last year, I'd never seen Nightmare Live when I was a kid. I'm far too young.
I was going to say, I hate to bring up the age thing here, but obviously, you know, me and Matt are similar ages. So I'm guessing Nightmare wasn't on TV when you were a kid, though.
No.
It ended in 94, so, yeah.
Wow. I mean, I was probably watching TV at that point, but I have no recollection of Nightmare Live. I just don't think it was one of the things that I watched at all. So my first experience of it was last year. But sort of knowing what was going on this year made it a bit more enjoyable. And, well, we only had two adventurers. Oh, sorry, warriors, whatever.
Dungeoneers is the title.
Dungeoneers.
With a hat. With a hat. You had the hat, right? The helmet, the horned helmet.
Yeah.
The helmet of justice.
That's the one.
I think last year nobody won or escaped the dungeon, whereas this year somebody did. So I think having, like, the winning ending was also quite fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking that actually somebody on Facebook was talking about this, that he was the person that won. Was he the one that got helped out by the guys from Shut Up and Sit Down? Because one guy won with their help.
No, apparently. We didn't get that. We had
James.
It was James Cook and a random lady from the audience, because the other person
Sarah
wasn't there. Yeah.
Ah, fair play.
Sarah, who also got on stage at Pandemic Live later that day.
Yeah.
Yes, let's move on to Pandemic Live then. We got there quite early, didn't we? So we were the first in the queue.
Surprisingly, though.
Yeah, I was amazed by that.
We weren't, like, super early.
We got there just after six, I think, and there was no one there, so we just sat down and made the queue. And, we just waited for that. We saw James pull up outside, and I went and just had a quick word with him, just to say thank you for some of his comedy stuff that he's put out on the internet, because it's made me laugh quite a lot, especially in the last few months where things have been a bit difficult. And he seemed to really appreciate that, so that was nice.
Jolly good.
And then a lady came along the row and said, would either of you two be interested in putting your name down to go up on stage? And I went, oh, no, thank you. But Ray went.
Go on then.
So you did. And we went into the show, sat down at the front, in the front row. And then after a couple of turns, Roy got asked to go up on stage, didn't she?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, but that went down well.
Actually, it was all right. It happens, doesn't it?
Well, I he asked me, he just goes, is that how you say it? And I was like, no. With, you know, perfect comedic timing, obviously. Yeah. He's like, well, why did you spell it Rye then? I'm like, I was 13. I think I talked too much just to cover up the fact that it was a bit nerve-wracking.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah. Especially with everyone shouting things at you. Although you probably knew what you were going to do straight before you even got up there, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. But the reason I kept asking the audience questions was because I know what they can be like sometimes, based on previous years.
Yeah.
Some of them can be dicks. Some of them just scream at you going, get out of the way! If you accidentally put your arm in front of the camera or something. Which is not very nice and not very fun. And it annoys me when I'm in the audience. So I was like, I know what you guys can be like. So I'm going to ask for your approval for literally everything. But I got to cure one of the diseases.
Yes. Plagosaurus.
Plagosaurus.
Good work.
The first of the diseases to be cured.
Yeah. And eventually all four were cured. And it was on hard difficulty as well, which was even more impressive.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure somebody accidentally, maybe on purpose, forgot to adjust the track. Because on hard mode, doesn't it start at like 2 or 3?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it does.
On the outbreak track. I'm sure it has in previous years.
We would have won anyway if because it only got up to about 5, didn't it? 4 or 5.
Yeah. Although you had a brief encounter with the concept of disease as well, didn't you, Matthew?
Oh, yeah, he tried to get me out of my seat. I was not going with that whatsoever. Yeah. I wasn't going to put a mask on and start dancing like a lunatic in front of everyone.
You never know, it might have been liberating.
Liberating? Maybe.
Is that what they make you do? They make you put a mask on and dance in front of people?
So, yeah, what happens
We can't spoiler it too much for Gareth.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to ruin the concept of disease for you, Gareth, but basically, the concept of disease does spread as the show goes on. That's all I'll say.
Okay, right, fair enough.
You'll have to see it next year.
I shall have to go witness this for myself, clearly.
We'll all go one evening and watch it. It's well worth it. It's a good laugh.
I think we've seen it every year since it started.
Yeah.
Because we saw the very first one as well, didn't we?
Yes, with Colin Baker.
Yeah. He was just like, I'm the doctor, I'll do what I want.
Yes, I'm the doctor, not a medic.
We're just going to cure this. We're just going to cure all of these over here. Yeah, actually, that's...
And they still lost, so...
That's against the... No, I'm just going to cure everything.
Colin Baker, the doctor that really, 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 really hated being the doctor at the end.
So I'll put a video of Ray's little brief moment of fame on YouTube because I've got it saved, and also the ending when we won as well. So I'll put that on
for the first time in Pandemic Live's history.
I think he said he'd done it 9 times and he'd won once, but I don't know what difficulty level that was on. I don't think it was on hard when they won.
So yeah, this is more important.
Yeah, because it's hard.
Basically.
Yeah.
I consider that quite an amazing feat, considering I've only ever beat Pandemic myself probably twice in my entire life. Yeah. So, well done. That was considering you're doing it live on stage in front of lots of other people as well, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
Well done, you.
Woohoo!
And last of all, before we start talking about games and things, the food festival was on at the Hilton again.
Yes, Chow Street.
Yes. Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum.
What did we have? We had Becky's Barges. We had some of them.
Yep.
I had something from, what was it, the Mighty Swoosh, I think it was. And I didn't realise it came with two massive great big chilies on the plate, which actually weren't that hot when I tried them, but I didn't eat them all. So.
Awesome.
And what else did we have? Canoodle.
Canoodle.
Yeah, that was very nice.
You had Thai green chili and I had Korean chicken.
Mm-hmm. See, nice. It sounds really nice. I went for a pork bun and it was okay. It was all right. I sat there eating it kind of thinking, yeah, I wish I'd gone with something like the bhajis. They look much nicer. This was a poor choice. I went to that again.
Yeah, and then on the Saturday? We went to Meat Shack.
Yeah, and had a massive burger.
Yep.
And they always fall apart, but it's worth it.
Yeah. They're also impossible to get out of the little bowl that they give them to you in, because the bowl is exactly the width of the burger.
Is that in the Hilton car park Meat Shack? Yeah.
Okay. Was it the Friday evening or the Saturday? On the Friday evening when we came out of, when we came up to get some food before pandemic, the Lady Masons had descended upon the Hilton again and were taking up all the seats while not eating anything.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Not that there were many seats to start with, but that didn't help that there were about 10, 12... late middle-aged ladies all sat around having a gas, not eating anything. Yeah.
Do they have special handshakes and stuff?
They may have done. I think notably they're all very, very white. And when they had I think they had a ball or something on Saturday evening.
Yeah.
They all had like pretty much the same dress, just in different shades. Like bluish green. That was about it. And I expect they'll probably be there next year as well.
Excellent. So to avoid the Hilton on the Saturday, then okay.
Just bring Chow Street to the lakeside instead of having the random street food, which is basically just the NEC's vendors outside. Have actual street food vendors outside.
That's possibly why they have to do it over there. Though I wonder if the NEC vendors are kicking off. Yeah, they may be a bit territorial about it, and say, "Oh, you know." I suppose I agree with you because it is. Although the Hilton is obviously open for the gaming and stuff, it'd be nice to have it.
It's a pain.
It is a pain to walk. If you're not gaming,
if you're not going for the open gaming or an event, then it is a. When you're walking around the hall all day, you don't really want to do more walking to go out and get food.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to talk about one more thing then. In the week leading up to the event, most people listening to this will know that I put online a map of the expo. So, obviously, the official map got released the week before the expo, and with the list of all the exhibitors. But they were two separate things. So you had the map with all of the stall numbers on, and then the list of where everyone was. So I just loaded up Adobe Acrobat and just put the two things together. So edited all the text to show where everything was. I thought, well, this is useful. I put it on our website, as I have done for the last couple of years. But this time I posted on Facebook on the UK board game trading and chat thing. And in the end, we had over 2,000 visits to the site and downloads of the map, which was amazing.
Yeah, it was very well received. People, you got a lot of good feedback for that, which I think is a great idea. I used it when I was out and about quite a lot because it was really good. It was really handy. It was also good to plan ahead as well before you went, so you could see, particularly because I was on limited time, as I said. It was nice to be able to go, right, I know where I want to go. I know certain stores I definitely want to see. So fair play to you. That was really, really helpful.
And then we got a shout out from some people as well. So Actual Lol on YouTube mentioned it in his video, although he called us incorrectly the analog gamer rather than the offline gamer, but it did put a caption on the screen saying sorry about that. And we did see him on Saturday and say hello, so that was nice. And someone else I saw The guys from Shut Up and Sit Down, we went past their store, but they weren't there. So, I mean, they tweeted us to say thank you for the map. So I was going to say hello to them, but unfortunately didn't get a chance to see them.
They were there at one point on the Friday. Towards the end of the day, I saw Quinns and Matt there. And I was like, we should go say hello. My friend was like, nah, we're not fanboys.
I've never actually listened to or seen any of their content, to be completely honest. So.
Oh, right, okay. I do like their reviews. I do. I think some of them, most of them are really, really good. And they're very fair, I think, to be honest. I like them. And they're really funny. I think they're really funny. So, yeah.
And while we were wandering around on the Saturday, we also saw the board game girl who'd flown over from Boston. So we had a brief chat with her as well. So, yeah, it was nice to meet other members of the gaming press, as it were. Although we're not, you know, big players in the space. We're all in this together, so you know they're not competition. It's just nice to get along with people and make friends in the hobby.
Yep.
So the event itself, we got in a day before everyone else because we turned up on Thursday evening for the press preview, which was insanely busy compared to last year. There were so many more exhibitors there. And we had 2 hours to just get through as much as we could. We had a little list, didn't we? But I think we only got through maybe a third of what we were wanting to see.
Yeah, I think part of it was really difficult to find people because the list that they put out was alphabetical by the
publisher name
or company or whatever. Whereas we're looking for the games, and then so if you're thinking, oh, I want to look at this game, you've got to go and scan through the whole thing out of any sort of order trying to find the game. And then also because it's all in alphabetical order, when it's in alphabetical order it doesn't put them in table order, so all the table numbers weren't in order, so trying to find the table numbers for the people that you wanted to see was a pain. And then actually seeing the physical numbers, because they were just like little letter labels with Sharpie written on them. And it's like, I can't see this.
And some people had covered them up or they weren't there, so...
Yeah, and it, like the way that it went, like how it ascended didn't make complete sense to me. So I was getting really confused. Like one side of a line would be 92 and the other side would be like 153, and I'm like, how does this make any sense?
Also
the fact that there were over 200 games there, so a similar number of people displaying their games, it was a crazy amount of stuff compared to last year.
It's
such a short space of time. It's only 200 games in 2 hours. Wow. That's a lot, isn't it? You're not going to be able to sort of realistically look at those properly in that time, are you really?
Yeah. No.
Okay, so the first people we went to at the press preview were One Free Elephant, because they were the first ones we found, basically.
Yep.
And we had a look at a couple of their games. You were quite interested in Carcosa, and I had a look at Microbrew. So what did you think of Carcosa?
Carcosa is sort of like Lovecraftian Carcassonne. So you are a cult leader trying to summon the King in Yellow, is basically the simplest way of describing it. I thought it was quite good. All of the pieces that came with it look really well made. And you get a free elephant meeple because it's from the One Free Elephant people, which explained their name choice to me, that you get a free elephant in all of their games.
Yeah, and I didn't even realise that. Well, because I've got Awesome, which I bought last year. I didn't even realise there was an elephant in there.
It's because you haven't played it yet.
Well, that's true. There's quite a few games I bought at the Expo last year that I haven't even touched.
Yeah, I mean, I was attracted to Carcos because it's a bit different from all the other Lovecraftian type things, in that all the other ones are, you're trying to stop the old gods, you're trying to stop the cultists, you're investigating whatever. Yeah. Whereas this one is, no, you are a cultist, you are trying to summon the King in Yellow.
And Microbrew is, I mean, we all know why I was attracted to that. It's a game about food and drink, same as most of the other games I buy.
But, and it fits in your pocket.
It does. It's like it reminded me a bit of Mintworks, because obviously that's quite a small game physically, but it's got quite a bit to it. So yeah, yeah, it's a tiny little game that fits in a little like case, and yeah, it was only like a prototype there, so and we didn't get a chance to go back to the to their proper stall and play it over the course of the weekend. But yeah, it's like a little game where you have to brew different types of beer to satisfy the customers.
Yep.
Sounds good. So, yeah. That sounds good.
It's right up my street, I think, that, even though I don't drink beer.
Very much so. The form factor and everything else is definitely up your street, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Next person we went to see was our friend Bez, and she gave us a lovely hug and said hello, and it was nice to spend a bit of time playing and talking about all the various new games that are coming up for Wibble++.
We played Muckle.
Yeah.
Which is Mickle, but because there were three of us playing it at once, it becomes Muckle.
So many Mickles make a Muckle, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mickle is one of the new games that Bez has developed for Wibble++ this year, I think.
Yeah, so it's basically if you have more than one Wibble++ deck, you can play it with multiple people, otherwise it's a solo game.
Yeah.
If you're playing with multiple people, then everyone has to use the same cards at the same time. And basically what you're doing is whenever you draw a card from the deck, you put it down and you're trying to, and you've got three rows that you can use to put the cards in. And you're basically just trying to make words. And when you make a word, if you get up to, I think it's between 1 and 5, then you take the first two cards away and score the other three.
Well,
whatever's left.
It's between 3 and 5. You can't have
a
two-letter
word. Yeah.
Because you discard both the letters.
Yeah, so you wouldn't get any points for it. And then if you do more than that, I think you just discard one of the cards, so you get more points if you make longer words.
Yeah, so if you get 6 letters or above, you only discard one letter when you score.
Yeah, I think so. I had the longest word, maybe, with Elastic. Was that the longest one we ended up with?
I think so. I think I got 6-letter word. I don't think I got anything longer than that.
Yeah.
I got taftan, which I did have to prove was a word.
Yeah, you have to Google it, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's because I was thinking of taft, and I was like, I'm going to check, because this rings a bell, but I don't know why, and I think it was a name of somebody, and I was like, no, you can't use proper names. So of taftan, which is a form of bread.
So Friday morning we actually popped up and saw Bez again and had a quick chat, which I recorded while you were busy drawing cats, Ray.
Yes, for the Kitty Cataclysm cat wall.
Yeah, it was a sight to behold, all those pictures of cats that people had drawn.
Yep.
Including mine, which was a bit naff, but, you know, I don't draw.
It was fine. Some of the others were, you know, less cat-like.
You were going to draw a second one, weren't you? And you got told off.
Well, I took the card home. It was a very poor portrait of my cat. So I still have the card.
Oh, yeah, because we didn't get a chance to go back and put it on the wall, did we?
No.
Oh.
I still have the card of Noomi. I will need to take a picture of it with her.
Yeah.
And send it to Bez. Just go, look, this is how bad my drawing is.
I'm sure she'll say it's a lovely picture.
Probably, yeah.
So yeah, as I say, we had a chat with Bez, and here it is now. So we're here at UKGE 2018 with friend of the show, often mentioned but never heard, Bez. Bez, welcome.
I am Bez, yeah. Thank you very much for coming by.
It's alright, no problem. We're glad to see you here.
Likewise.
So what have you got this weekend? What are you showing everyone?
So what I'm basically focusing on is my big thing, Wibble++, which is going to continue to be a big thing for decades to come. Because the whole point of Wibble++ is that it is a deck of cards with which you can play many games. And I'm continuing to make more and more games with it.
Yep.
I mean, just in the last week, because I've been a bit manic coming up to UK Games Expo, I've invented and designed and developed 2 entire new games for the deck. And one was a solo game that I've played about 30-40 times now.
Right, okay.
It's I'm actually pretty good at it. Now, as you can imagine, after that many goals.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, the whole deck, it's a bunch of letters. It's pairs of letters. And so the solo game that I mentioned, it's like 2 minutes, you're racing through. It's called Extendable. You're trying to make a word and make it grow and grow.
Yeah.
The other game was Connectable, which was a co-op where you're trying to connect multiple different cards, kind of physically. Like, imagine Scrabble, but there's multiple different things to start off with, and you need to somehow get them to all match up.
Right.
But because there's two letters on the card, it becomes achievable. And then, but with the base game, like the main core games in the deck, you know, you've got just a bunch of massive variety. You've got so much variety. You've got, like, obviously word games, but games to do with language, like storytelling and party games. You've got, like, the dexterity one, Grabble, which you mentioned, I think. And you've got now Couple is the sixth core game, which is a cooperative thing.
Yeah.
You've got Alphabetical, completely abstract. And the seventh one is going to be Puzzle, which I'm super excited about. It's a really good, it's an super abstract one-player game, kind of like Patience. But yeah, that's my big thing, and I've got it for sale. It's normally £12, but the first edition, selling it for £10. But like, yeah, I'm going to be working on this for years to come, so like,
yeah,
whatever you do, like, just check it out. And there's also Kitty Cataclysm, which you mentioned yourself.
Yep.
And Kitty Cataclysm, I didn't have a good quality prototype yet, but I've got a functional prototype which you can totally play if you want and try out, and I've got the kind of art, some of the art so far, so hopefully people can get a good idea of what's coming out in just a couple of months.
Yep.
I've got Yogi, because even though I'm not selling it, it's still something that's done really well with my name attached. I'm super proud of it, and I'm even showing off things further into the future, namely my game for 2019, which is just called Plus.
Yes.
And so that's a game of frantically shouting things. I've also got the game with the longest name ever, which is going to be many years into the future because it requires like 550 illustrations, which is a lot.
Okay.
And I've also got Yogi 2, which is a sequel that I was asked to do earlier this year, and I'm super excited to kind of continue working on silliness, and it's just kind of upping the silliness, making it all team-based. The original was kind of all about contortion and touching, you know, different parts of your body, holding balancing cards and still managing to draw cards.
Yeah.
And now it's just pushing it to the next level, where sometimes when you draw cards, you might need to touch your head and shoulders or your knees and toes or whatever. But yeah, that's what I'm showing, and I'm super excited.
Just before we go, we know that recently you partnered up with Alleycat Games.
Oh, yeah.
How's that been going with you?
Yeah, it's been really well. I mean, it's one day a week, kind of, generally I go in, and yeah, it's super exciting. I mean, part of it is just, it's super validating to be doing something that I'm absolutely passionate about. And some of it's, you know, the boring, you know, admin-y side of emailing people. You know, I'm getting paid for it, so it's okay. But yeah, some of it's like super amazing stuff where we've got a game coming out called Welded Iron, which I can't say too much about, but it's going to be amazing. It's like this amazing artwork of like a sort of steampunk. Anyway, I'm not going. It's it's like Victoriana. If you like steampunk, if you like big robots attacking each other, and if you like tower defense, you will love this game.
Cool.
There's me, David Turksey, and Cesar. And generally, I think it's a really good relationship. I've enjoyed being there, and it's been really wholesome.
Cool. Well, best of luck for the weekend, and I hope by Sunday night your wall is full of cats.
Thank you very much. Yeah, if you are, I mean, this is going to be going out well after UK Games Expo, but at this point, this is on the Friday morning, and I've got like two panels full of cats from previous shows, and I'm hoping by the end I can fill up, fingers crossed, like six entire panels. We will see how it goes.
Yeah, best of luck, mate. And
thank you
nice
very
to
much.
See you.
Yeah, likewise.
So after we saw Bez, the next people we saw at the press preview were Original Content London, who we knew from a couple of years ago? I think it was, because
I think it was the first year we went as press.
Yes, I think you're probably right. And they're the guys who did what was Battle of the Bands, but ended up becoming Band Manager. And they were showing off their new game, which is Thronestorm. This game doesn't actually have a listing on Board Game Geek at the moment, so the only place I could find any information about it was on Amazon. So if you go to their own website and click on the information, it just takes you to the Amazon page.
Oh, okay.
but it's a deep strategy game for two players. And it's got lots of lovely cards and a nice sort of cloth mat, to use, which is a play mat with all the bits marked on it. And yeah, it looks quite good. We've got a copy to play and see what we think of it. But yeah, it does looks really nice.
Yeah, no, I've not heard of that one. That sounds quite intriguing.
It describes itself as a deep but quick abstract strategy game. So there you go.
All right.
Then we popped and saw Gil Hover from Formal Ferret Games, where he was demoing not only the Networks, which is a great game, but also the expansions for it, which were the Networks Executives, which is something I backed on Kickstarter a few months ago, but also the UK expansion for the Networks called Teletime, which is basically more cards for the game. And you know how in the normal Networks there were like puns on TV shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this one there are puns on lots of British TV shows.
Okay. Okay. Oh, hence the very British, the whole Teletime thing. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So one of the cards which I found quite good was Blake's 8. I think Drake's 8. Sorry.
Yeah.
I knew you'd laugh at that. I knew you'd like that one.
That's awesome. Which
obviously, it's just the of Blake 7, but. Yeah, I can't remember any of the others now. I have got it, and I did go back and buy it, because obviously I've got the Networks and really like it. So it's also got new genres as well, chat shows, quiz shows, and kids shows that have different effects. So it's not just adding more cards to the game, it adds a few new mechanics to it as well. So,
okay.
So yeah, I'll have to get that to the table next. It's obviously going to go in the box next time I play the Networks, so I'll play them all together, so... So that was Formal Ferret, and while we were wandering around, this, I don't know if this was on our hit list, but we came across it. It might have been on yours.
Yeah.
Too Many Bones from Chip Theory Games.
Ah, yes. Too Many Bones.
You like this, don't you?
I've not played it, but I've picked it up a couple of times and thought about getting it. I do like the concept. It's a beautiful game. I mean, it's a generally beautiful looking game.
Yeah.
Just, it's quite expensive, I've got to be honest. And
£80, I think he said.
Yeah, and last year at the expo it was selling for over 100. Every time I saw it, it was over 100. It's on the list to get at some point and give it a go. I believe it's a dice placement type game, which looks quite interesting. I quite like those. But the artwork in it alone is really interesting, and it's a really distinctive looking game.
I like the fact that all the player mats aren't cardboard; they're all made of like neoprene.
Mm.
So yeah, it's all got this really really nice quality to it.
Yeah, one of their other games was on my hit list, but they didn't have it with them at the press preview, which was Triplock, which we did get to see a bit later on in the regular show. But Too Many Bones was also because they were bringing out an expansion this year, which is why they... I assume it's why they'd come.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it going, these player boards are so nice. Mm. They're not boards, but these player mats are so nice. No, too expensive.
Go on, sorry.
I was just going to say it's definitely something I would like to play.
Yeah.
It's one I'm going to probably pick it up at some point once I've got this year out of the way, to be honest. Because it looks awesome. And if you picked it up, like the box, it's well heavy.
It looked heavy.
It's quite a hardcore game. I didn't fancy carrying that around the expo all day as well. But yeah, no, it looks good. It looks really good.
Next up were Two Tomatoes, and we had a look at New Corp Order, which I think was another one on your hit list.
Yes. So New Corp Order is a follow-on from Peak Oil, which sort of blew up Kickstarter last year, I think, or the year before. And it's about basically you're a shady advertising company and you're trying to get shady advert deals. But also while we were there, I had a look at Upstream, which is a game where you are salmon trying to get up the stream to the spawning points. And I liked Upstream. I think I came away... I went there to look at New Corp Order, but I came away thinking that Upstream might be more my thing. All of the games had very nice art and really well put together stuff. I just think I'm not quite. It's too soon to start making games about how evil capitalism and commercialism is, because it's happening anyway. I don't really want to pretend that I'm part of it as well.
Yeah.
Games are more about escapism for me. Well, I think it's a fairly, you know, important part of it. And I don't particularly escape very much if I'm just pretending to be another cog in the corporate wheel with being some shady ad exec. I mean, it looks like a really good game, and obviously Peak Oil, sort of, as I say, was really popular. But yeah, possibly not one for me. Upstream, however, I was very tempted to get later on.
Next, while we were wandering around, I just, out of the corner of my eye, saw Museum laid out on a desk, which is a game I backed on Kickstarter a while back, which is the one where you're a curator trying to gather priceless artifacts from around the world to put in your museum. So not much to say about that, but I just got a chance to look at the components and appreciate all of the lovely artwork that's going into that game. So that will hopefully be arriving on my doorstep pretty soon. And yep. Just behind them were the Noble Artist, which is Jamie Noble Fryer, who was someone who we wanted to have a quick chat with because I quite like the look of his game Hero Master, the epic game of epic fails, which is basically a dungeon crawler, but a parody of a dungeon crawler. And he said that the characters in there are like the kind of characters who, the way he was describing it to me, made me think of when I was at school. And I was always the last kid picked to be on the football team. That's basically the kind of thing he was going for, I think. That they're all, like, you know, pretty poor adventurers that no one in their right mind would generally want to go out there and start looting treasure. Yeah, I'm just reading the BGG page. It's like, as the numbers dwindle in the tavern and heroes sing their way to battle, you realise your hopes rest with the no-hopers sat around you.
It's basically, we're going to go out adventuring with the nosebleed section.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing that. I think that's coming to Kickstarter, and yeah, I'll probably end up backing that when that appears, because I quite like the look of it. And I think the last people we saw at the press preview before we started to get booted out were someone on your list, again, which was Blue Donut Studios, because they were showing off their game Line, the skateboard game.
Yep.
We won't talk too much about this now because we'll mention it again later. But suffice to say that I was quite impressed with what I saw. And the guys at Blue Donut were really, really nice as well.
Yeah, very friendly.
Yeah.
As were the people at One Free Elephant. They were super friendly.
Oh, yeah, they were lovely. In fact, I think, to be honest, everyone was lovely.
Yeah. You're all lovely people.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
And then that was our press preview. And we went and got a cheeky Nando's.
Yep.
And then came back the next day. So we've talked for a bit, Gareth. You were in on Friday, so why don't you tell us about some of the games you saw on Friday?
Oh, wow. Okay. I got to play a game called The Dice Dungeon. Did you see that one?
I've heard of it, and isn't it on Kickstarter at the moment?
I believe it is, and I'm very tempted to back it because I had a lot of fun playing that. It was a really nice idea. It was kind of think Dice meets Connect 4 meets an RPG dungeon crawl. It sounds really odd, but until you play it, but it makes perfect sense. You kind of dip your hand into a bag, pull dice out, and you have to basically create a line from one side of the board to the other side. But you can basically, obviously it's dice, so there's multiple sides. You can flip and you can reverse and you can destroy and you can lay them out. But basically the idea is you have to get a pathway from one side to the next, and then on your opponent's side of the board, like a Connect 4 style board, you have to lay like all the horrible traps, the dragons, the beasties, the monsters, and all that sort of stuff to try and hinder their progress. It was a really cool little game. I really enjoyed that one. That was good. What else did I see on the Friday? It was so much stuff. I just kind of wandered around in amazement at everything. It's kind of spent quite a lot of time shopping on Friday, I've got to be honest. I picked myself up some games I've been looking forward to for a while. I sat and finally played Adrenaline, which is, I don't know if you've seen or played that one. It's effectively a first-person shooter into a board game with Euro mechanics, and it was great fun. Got to meet a nice gentleman called Paul Grogan, who's done lots of teaching videos on YouTube, and he was a thoroughly nice man, and he sat and bared with us quite a lot and taught us how to play it. That was good fun.
Yeah, he was one of the contestants on Pandemic Live, actually, when we were there.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was really friendly. He works for, is it Czech Element Games? I think I'm getting it right. And they're the ones you make it around in. So he finally convinced me to buy it and gave me some lovely promos for it as well, which is really good of him. What else? I wandered around and saw a few things. Solomon came, but I'm not sure I guess we'll probably go back to that later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that because we played that on Sunday.
We did indeed. I had a look at Villagers Hacks and I was quite upset that I didn't back it on Kickstarter because it looks like a lot of fun. Don't know if you know about that one. It's the one where you're the beastie and the villagers are basically attacking your castle and you have to fight them off, which is quite fun. Okay. Yeah, so those are some of my highlights from Friday.
Cool. We, as I say, went to see Bears, and then once we'd done that, we just started wandering up and down the roads or streets, whatever you'd like to call them, in the halls. And we just had our map, and we were just, you know, when we came across something that we had marked off, we stopped and had a look. But there's also a few other things that we looked at that we didn't mark, so we'll go for everything that we did. So after Bez, we went to see someone I know, who's Richard, who the guy who's designing his game Master of Olympus from his company that he's formed called Bookie Ball Games. And we did have a chat with Richard, so rather than me prattle on about his game, let's listen to that now.
So we're here with Richard Buxton, someone else we've mentioned on the podcast before, someone I've met at Asgard Games in Warsaw, where we've play-tested his game Master of Olympus, which is what you've got here this weekend, Richard.
Yeah, so I've bought the current Master of Olympus prototype. It involves plenty of the old stuff I've been working with. So the first version of the game used Lego pieces as one of its components. I still have some of those, but I've also recently had some custom 3D pieces that stack together a bit like Lego made.
Yeah.
So that's progress. Another piece of progress is I have artwork for the all-important God cards.
Yep.
With this prototype. Sadly, they were printed on my domestic printer at home, so they don't look very good here.
Yeah.
But the key thing is it's a functioning prototype, and I'm able to demo it, able to build interest. That's the stage I'm at, really. I'm aiming to build interest here. I have some fancy dress with a homemade trident to show off. I have a volunteer helping me out who knows the game quite well. We're hoping to get people playing the game, which requires them to be Greek gods. They are Greek gods, influencing the lives of mortals and trying to prove themselves the best god. That's what we're going with here.
Cool. So what's the sort of timeline you're thinking about? I know you're still very early in... Well, you're not early as in time, mm-hmm. because you've been doing this for a long time.
Yes.
But you're still, I guess, a long way away from thinking about Kickstarters and stuff like that. But what long term, how long are you thinking?
So the next stage for this is... likely to take about a year. It needs to be blind playtested.
Yeah.
That's the next big hurdle. I last wrote the instruction manual for this a year ago,
okay. And
it was out of date almost immediately. So that's something I need to do. Once that's done, a year of blind playtesting and hopefully reviewing.
Yeah.
You know, if it can be blind playtested, it can also be reviewed. I think I'm happy with the quality of it to have that happen now. After that year, I can probably start thinking about putting a Kickstarter page together,
which
will again take months and months. I've yet to commission a graphic designer, so if any of your listeners are into that, then do get in touch. It's possible I'll have launched a Kickstarter in about 2 years. Unlikely, but we're looking at somewhere between the next 2 and 4 years to launch a Kickstarter.
Cool. And let's talk about the name. Bookie Ball Games. Where did that come from?
It wasn't my original name, actually, but I thought and thought about what I find interesting about board games. I work as a chemistry teacher, I can talk about science for a long time.
Yeah.
For the same reason I can talk about board games for a long time. A buckyball is a nanoparticle. I have a kind of demo with me of a buckyball. It's a nanoparticle in which a set of carbon atoms bond themselves together in a way that looks like a football. So the reason I find this interesting is the rules that govern what make a football the shape it is, with the mixture of pentagons and hexagons, also govern the shape carbon atoms can form. So there's one rule for two completely different things.
Yeah.
So the result is that when you start looking at the universe in this way, the universe is much simpler than it looks. That's what chemistry is for me.
Yeah.
Whereas with board game design, you come up with some simple mechanics and hope the players create a complex scenario.
Yes.
So, in other words, board game design is the exact opposite of chemistry. And that's why, if I like the one, I like the other. So the name is really a tribute to an aspect of chemistry I like, which I think feeds into board game design.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the quick chat, mate. And we'll definitely catch up with you at some point in the future.
Good. Look forward to it. Thank you, Matt.
So after chatting to Richard, we went to Black Box Adventures because, I would have just walked past, but you said, Matt, look, there's a game about food. And I went, ooh. And there was a table there ready to demo it with no one playing, so we wandered up and had a sit down. So that's Frutti di Mar, Veni Vidi Antipasti. Which is basically a game about getting a king crab into the middle of a plate of spaghetti.
Yes, he needs to get to the top of the spaghetti mountain for reasons. I think it's to fight back against the incoming titans, aka humans.
Oh, of course. Well, yeah, where else would you sit and why else would you be doing it?
Yeah.
To defend your, you know, fishy friends from being chowed down upon.
I quite enjoyed this. I mean, it wasn't that complex. Once we got the basic mechanics, it's all about buying new workers. And each worker has got a specific number of moves and things that they're allowed to do.
Yeah.
Like they can attack within a certain distance, or they can do so much attack, or they can move so many places on the board. So once you've got that down, then it's just about working out your strategy and trying to figure out what all the other players are going to do as well.
Yeah, it's a bit like seafood chess, I suppose.
Yeah, in a way.
Because everything has a different movement and has a different ability, with the added benefit of you can attack each other.
Yeah.
And you snuck into victory.
I did. I did, because, right at the last second there.
Because I was thinking, oh, it's okay, I'll kill him next turn, and then I didn't realise there wasn't a next turn.
Yeah.
Next up, we went to ITB to take a look at Newspeak. Newspeak? I don't know how you pronounce that.
I think it's Newspeak, I think. I quite like, I love the idea of this, and the theme of it was really cool. I didn't get a chance to play it, although they did offer us a demo. I learnt a lesson again this year at UKGE. When people offer you a demo and the tables are empty, you say yes.
Yeah.
Because you won't get a chance later on a Friday, and I learnt that one because, it looked really good, and I liked the idea. The idea of the Big Brother element, that was quite cool, and the coded transmissions between the parties, that was quite cool. I may pick that up at some point, actually.
Yeah, see, I remember, well, a couple of months ago, they started sort of announcing it by this sort of encoded game that was online, and I was trying to get through all the codes, and I think I got stuck on, like, the last one. But that was quite fun. I thought that was quite a good way to engage with the audience, to sort of announce the new thing that's all going to be about codes, is release a bunch of codes, tell a bunch of people if you can get through all five levels of the codes, then you win something. Those were quite fun. And then we did get a demo of Newspeak, and we beat the Big Brother, or the lady who was showing it to us.
Yes.
So the idea is one. I assume it can be more than one person, but they're like the controller, and they're trying to see where you dissidents are hiding and meeting up, and the rest of you have to sort of, if you're the lead dissident, if it's your turn to be the lead dissident, you have to sort of encode a message to your friends so that everybody guesses the same location without being so obvious that the controller can guess your location.
It kind of reminded me a bit of a one versus many version of Codenames, which is not necessarily a bad thing because Codenames is great fun in terms of, but it's slightly different, if that makes any sense, not wishing to do it down. I thought, you know, the concept of it's a cracker. It could be a lot of fun with a group of you on the table.
Yeah, I think because if you're the distance, you get like a little, you pick a card out of, I think in total there's 8 code cards variations. So we had the same code card, and you'd sort of have to talk as if you're having a normal conversation, but drop certain words in there that meant certain other things, which were giving hints to where you wanted the other person to go. So we were trying to make up encoded messages all about the Games Expo.
Yeah.
And I think one of my messages ended up being about going to the zoo or something like that. And I think we got it wrong the first time, but after that, I think we managed to
got back in sync, didn't we?
Yeah, and it was quite fun watching the person giving us the demo trying to figure out what on earth we were doing.
I quite liked it. I don't know if it's a game I would buy, but I would certainly play it.
Yeah, it's more... I think the problem is, for me, is it requires at least three people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is... If it requires minimum three people, I will normally pass over on the basis that I can't always guarantee a minimum of three people. So it would just sit around doing nothing. So after Newspeak, we went and had a little wander. We were actually looking for something else, and then something may or may not have caught my eye that involved cats. So we played a little game called Cobra Paw, which doesn't really have much to do with cats apart from the box art. It's sort of like dominoes with symbols, and you have two dice. You roll the dice, then you have to spot the little tile that has the combination of symbol you've rolled, get your finger to it first and move it out, and that gets you a point. So if you win by getting to the tile first, then you get to roll again. If the other person wins, then the rolling of the dice switches. And I think we were just playing a two-player, so I think it was first to seven?
Yeah, I think so.
And it did get quite intense.
Yeah.
Because, to begin with, you're just trying to be the fastest to get... Because they're all the tiles are in the middle, and everybody can see them. They're smack in the middle of the table in front of you. And everybody's trying to go, I got it first, ha-ha. But then once each of us had sort of a little collection in front of us as well, because obviously... the dice don't care where the tile is. It was difficult to sort of go, is it in my pile? Is it in Matt's pile? Is it in the middle? And sort of trying to scan through three different piles of symbols started making it get a little bit more like, time's running out. But I won in the end.
Yes. Only just though.
Only just. It was like 6-6. And then I snuck in there. But that's obviously the most important part of that story.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on then to Alleycat Games, someone we know and have mentioned on this show before. Yeah. And we had a look at their new pirate-themed deck builder called Ruthless, which is a game that Pete actually mentioned last time he was on the show as one that he had his eye on as well.
Yeah, he saw it at Essen.
Yeah.
2016?
I think that's right.
I think, originally. And I think he said back then it was very bare bones, but the idea of it was he absolutely loved it. Actually, I wanted to see Coral Islands at Alleycat as well.
Yeah.
But that was really popular. Every time I walked past, someone was demoing it. So I just sort of, like, eyed over some people's shoulder, and that looks like it would be quite good as well. Kind of like 3D Sagrada, I think is what Cesar said. Or I may be misinterpreting, but that's what it looked like to me. Mm. So we sat down and played Ruthless instead. And it's like pirates, poker hands, deck building, and stuff.
Yeah, I really liked it. In fact, I pre-ordered it because I like it so much.
Yep, and you got a free promo card signed by Roland, who designed it.
Roland McDonald, the designer. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of the sort of deck building that I enjoyed from Dale of Merchants.
Yeah.
Not so much the... Obviously, because in Dale of Merchants, you're building market stalls in front of you that stay. So once you use a card in a market store, you don't have it for the rest of the game. But with this, you're buying crew members and putting those crew members in front of you to try and build the best poker hand you can. Well, out of the ones that are available, like a straight and a flush and things like that. So,
yeah.
And I liked the round marker, which, or the first player marker, which obviously was a little miniature bottle of rum.
Yeah, which may or may not have come out of a hotel.
I'm guessing it probably did. So obviously that's probably not going to be in. There probably will be a first player token in the game, but it's not going to have real rum in it, I'd imagine. So
I would definitely put a vote in to have another miniature bottle of rum in the game. That will definitely help it sell, I think. I'm looking at it next. I saw this being played as I wandered around. It did look really good. The artwork is absolutely fantastic.
It
looks like it. And I do like my deck builders. I am definitely a miniature gamer. My other love is deck builders. I actually wish I played this one. It looks really nice.
Well, you'll be able to once it arrives at Matt's house.
There you go. You see, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, more reasons to have a gaming night after work.
So that was our Friday. Our Saturday started off with a visit to the Habba stand.
Yes, for two reasons.
Yes, one was for me to say hello to someone who messaged me on Facebook to say, thanks for the map, Matt. And I was like, yeah, hello, no problem. Because he said they were actually telling people at the show to go to our website to look at it because people were getting lost. So that's quite nice.
Yeah. And then the other reason was because I wanted to have a quick look at Ikwazu.
Yeah.
Which I think was up for... I think it was up for an award. It may have been one of the children's awards. But it did look really fun. It's sort of... It's really difficult to describe. There's like a raised part of the board in the middle, behind which is the wall behind the waterfall that the... I can't remember what the name of the people was, the Ikwazu. But basically these... tribe of people, their most precious commodity is gemstones, so they hide them in cracks in the wall behind a waterfall. And on the board is a representation of that wall and the waterfall. So as you go along, you have to try and lay down colour appropriate cards to place one of your gemstones in the wall in the most opportune place to score you points. And then as the rounds go on, the waterfall slowly moves across, and the gap that you can see of the wall where you can place your gemstones moves across. I believe the higher the points are, the further it sort of goes along. And it looked quite fun. We didn't get to have a play.
No.
I think they were probably saving it for, actual children. But it looked perfectly fine for adults as well. To be honest,
yeah,
it looked very fun and nice and colourful.
I'm looking at the pictures, it looks nice.
We then went along to, I think it was one of the secondary Asmodee stands, to have a look at something. I think you had this on your list, didn't you? When I Dream,
yeah, this was sort of on my maybe if we happen to come across it at the right time lists. Because originally I wanted to go to the Asmodee stand to look at some other stuff, which we didn't find at all for some reason. But When I Dream was there, and it was completely empty, and the chap, for some reason wearing a sombrero, was very happy to have someone to come and show the game. So it's a party game. So there are a bunch of other people who played it with us. And in said party game, you are trying... Well, one of you is wearing a blindfold, like the little cat mask you use if it's really bright outside and you want to go to sleep. There's a big deck of cards inside a bed-shaped holder. Everybody else is trying to say one word to get the person with the blindfold to guess the word that's on the card. The twisty turny bit is that everybody has like a hidden identity. So you're either a fairy, a boogeyman, or the Sandman. Fairies will win if the blindfolded person guesses more correct answers than wrong answers. The boogeyman will win if there are more wrong answers than right answers, and the sandman wins if both stacks are equal. So if you guess equally number of wrong and correct words. So the first round I was the sandman, which was ridiculously difficult. I'm like, there's no way I can get these two stacks to be equal. This is crazy. This woman is a genius. How does she keep guessing these words? And then in the second round, I had the blindfold on, and Matt was the boogeyman. Which was ironic, because I was mostly using you to verify what my guesses were based on the other two people.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. But it was because one of the girls was so quiet, I could barely hear what she was saying. Like one of the words she said, I just completely had no idea. It was so quiet. So I was like, okay, let's see what Matt says. But I was pretty much just waiting for you to say something to verify what my own idea was. Which was, I'm not sure whether that means I have particularly good lateral thinking if you were the person who's trying to make me fail. Obviously, it's because I think too sideways-y. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
So after When I Dream, we were specifically going to try and find actual Ol to say hi and thanks, and you got our name wrong.
Yeah.
But he also happened to be volunteering at the Fog of Love stand, which happened to vacate two seats for a demo just as we arrived. So he said,
"I was lucky."
Yeah.
It was absolutely rammed whenever I walked past it.
Oh, it was it's rammed.
Yeah.
Like we sat down, and then two more people sat down, and then two more people sat down. It was just a never-ending stream of like two people get up, two people sit down. Mm. But Actual Ol said, "Why don't you try the game?" And I said, "Well, I've heard of it, so you know, why not? I've heard it's quite good." So we sat down for a game of Fog of Love, which, if you haven't heard of it or heard about it, you are playing a romantic relationship. So one of you is each partner, and you're trying to get, I think the idea is you get the most sort of satisfaction as possible and see whether the relationship lasts. So if by the end you break up, you kind of lose the game.
Apparently, I've heard somewhere that it's a game you should not play with your partner, apparently.
Well, I think there were two couples to my right, to Matt's left. There were two couples there, and the one immediately next to us did ask and say, "Should we play this as a couple?" And Actual Ol did say, "Well, I play it with my girlfriend all the time.
He did, yeah.
It's fine." I don't necessarily see why it would be a problem, unless you are specifically, you've somehow managed to pick traits and features that are the real you.
Yeah.
Because the idea is you pick like traits and features and occupation to make a person.
All right.
So I was like a jealous, shy, caring, royal heiress. I can't remember. I was very tanned. That was it. I can't remember the other features that I had. I'm like, that's nothing like the real me at all.
Yeah, and my character was an internet celebrity, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah. And you're trying to match the symbols that are on your cards that only you can see to what's on the board, which you do by playing through scenarios. So unless you have a very, very sort of spooky coincidental relationship that exactly mirrors the Fog of Love relationship you have created ad hoc, I don't see why it would be that much of a problem between real partners.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
It was a fun game, even though we played like a sort of squashed down version with some of the later game mechanics weren't in there, because we only did like the first scenario kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I could also see it taking quite a while.
Hmm.
If, depending on how many scenarios you have to play through.
Yeah, not for me, but I could appreciate why people like it.
Yeah. I think I can see why it did so well.
Yeah.
And it's come out, it's had quite a lot of critical applause, as it were.
I think it's a game that I like the artwork, and it's, I know the mechanics are meant to be really, really good in it. It doesn't really appeal to me, to be honest, but I can see, again, same as you guys, I can see why it's done well, why people like it.
Yeah.
It's not particularly on my list, but at the same point, I would get a game of it at some point if somebody I knew actually picks it up.
Yeah, it's something that I would play, but I don't think it would be more than maybe once or twice.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't be a permanent fixture.
No, no.
I think repeatedly playing it too much to the sort of detriment of anything else would get kind of boring. But
plus also you know what else is missing from it, don't you? It's not got enough miniatures.
Or cats or food.
Exactly, there you go.
You could add miniatures.
I could proxy some in, I suppose. I've got a few thousand in my games room.
Yeah, just bring out some orcs. That'll make it infinitely better.
You could do like a Space Hulk versus like the orcs, or Space Hulk versus the Gene Sealers. Fog of Love, that could be interesting.
That would be an interesting crossover, yeah. So then after that, we were wandering, and I happened to wander past Osprey Games, who were showing Sakura, just as two people were about to start a demo. So I leant over and I was like, can I play? And then Matt got dragged into it as well.
I'm glad I did. I actually really like this. I really do. It's a Rainer Knizia game, and a lot of his games I like.
Yeah, so the basic premise is you are, I don't know, courtiers in the emperor's court in Japan, and he's walking through the garden. And you're trying to get the best pictures of him with against the cherry trees. And you all play a card at once, face down, then flip it over, and then you play them in ascending order based on the little number that's in the bottom corner. You have to move the emperor and yourself in such a way that you don't end up bumping into the emperor, otherwise you get sent three spaces back.
As opposed to getting your head cut off. Or
yeah.
But you do lose a favour.
Yeah, you lose a favour if you bump into him.
Right, okay.
And then there's three picture points, or scenic points, and if you happen to be the closest to him when he lands on that space, you get the top points, and the second person gets the second points, what, and so on. And I won that as well. But only just because I tied with one of the other chaps that was there. And the tiebreaker was, if you happen to be the person closest to him right now, then you win. So I found it quite fun.
I did. I like the fact that you're not sure what the other players are going to do. So you can only plan your move to a certain extent.
Yeah. And I think looking at the board, it looked quite small. And I was thinking, this isn't going to take that long, surely. This looks quite simple. But then when you start playing it, there's way more to it than first meets the eye. And I quite like that as well.
Yeah, I think we were playing it for a good 20, 25 minutes, weren't we?
Yeah, and the art was really nice as well.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a really, really pretty looking game, that one, to be fair.
It is, yeah.
So eventually we wound up in the second hall at about halfway through Saturday. So it took us 1.5 days to do hall one. And the first game we saw there, my eyes lit up. Because we found a party game about making terrible puns.
Oh my god, it's like it was written for you, Matt.
Oh no.
And Matt and the lady at the stand then decided to start having a pun off.
We started punning with each other. So this was Rampunctious. And as I say, it's just the game starts, I'm reading from the BGG page, the game starts by the players making puns out of their own names. Whoever has the best pun becomes the pundit. Pundit has a hand of five cards. They draw a scenario from the deck and read it aloud to start the round. Each scenario shows a unique, fictitious situation. The pundit then plays a topic of their choice from their hand, and the players must make as many puns as possible by combining the scenario and the topic. So there you go. It was good. I like the look of it. I'm sort of annoyed with myself that I didn't go back and buy a copy, actually, because it was £20. I should have bought this. Never mind. I might keep my eyes open for it again in the future. I've got quite a few party games now. I didn't really want to buy too many more, but it's puns, isn't it?
Yeah.
So next, we went and saw Quality Beast, because I wanted to check out how Seize the Bean was doing. They had a copy on display, and it's looking very nice. I like the little coffee beans that they had there. It was really, really looking good. Can't wait for that to ship at some point.
I played that one last year. I really liked Seize the Bean. I thought it was a good game. Yeah. Good fun.
We had a play of their new game, which was Towers of the Sun, which is an abstract strategy game, which is the next one they're going to be releasing, which is all about building towers. And there's basically like on the board, you've got certain spaces you can build the towers, and you have your little meeple that can move between them. But you can only move between towers that are the same height. If you want to move up or down a level to a tower that's taller or shorter, you have to pay a penalty and leave a gem behind. And everyone's got a certain amount of gems and a certain amount of tower tiles that they can use. And also you get points for, at the end of the game, if you've got any gems and tower tiles left that match up. So if you've got three gems and three tower tiles, you get like however many points. But you'd lose points if you had gems that didn't have a corresponding tile to sit on. So difficult to explain, as I say, it's an abstract strategy game. But I really liked it. I started off really well and then started to fade as the game went on. But you and the chap from Quality Beast who was demoing it to us, you started to get stronger and you ended up both having quite a lot more points than me at the end of the game. And the other game that they were demoing, which we didn't get a chance to play, but we had a look at, was Quantified, which is a game all about social inequality and refugees and things like that. Which looked quite interesting, but we didn't really get a chance to play it. Looking on the BGG page, it describes it as a co-op board game in a world where everyone's behaviour is constantly surveilled and analysed, which is quite interesting. And your behaviour results in you getting a social credit score. I won't talk too much about this because we had a chance to chat to the designer of the game, Jana, who was there. And so let's have a listen to our brief chat with her now.
Okay, so we're here with Jana from Quality Beast. Hi, Jana. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you tell us what you're showing here at UK Games Expo this year?
Hi, thanks for stopping by.
That's all right.
What you see here is a cooperative game on human rights, which will be published by Quality Beast on Kickstarter. And the special thing about this game is that you start from different positions in society. So it's an asymmetric starting condition for every player.
Yeah.
A player starts as a refugee, another as a migrant, an unemployed or an employed person.
Yeah.
And that defines your position on the social ladder. And depending on how high or how low you stand, you have access to certain rights. So you have access to certain abilities in the game.
Right.
So the higher position player can do pretty almost everything, and the refugee on the bottom of the ladder is pretty restricted in what they could do.
Right, okay.
And the goal of the game is that all of the players have all of the human rights at the end of the game.
Okay.
So you're trying to climb the ladder,
but
at the same time, government and corporations, they raise the bars. So you're trying to tear the bars down, but they're rising again, and you're trying to climb up. And while you're doing this, you're losing data all over the board. So you're walking through a smart city in which you lose data because you're being filmed by a camera. The GPS of your smartphone is tracked.
Oh, right, okay.
And maybe your healthcare insurance company saw that you didn't do enough sports because your GPS didn't really move a lot.
Yeah.
So they might raise your insurance premium and lower you on the social ladder.
Right, okay.
Probably they also saw that you didn't spend enough time at home with your child, and that's why you downgraded as well.
Okay.
So you're trying to not lose too much data in your game and also try to fight for privacy.
So very, you know, very in tune with the current sort of concerns that a lot of people have about data collection and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, definitely.
So what was your inspiration with coming up with this game? What made you think of doing this as a game?
I got to know a group of refugees in Amsterdam who are in limbo since over 10 years.
Wow, okay.
So they got rejected asylum.
Yeah.
But they can't enter the Netherlands.
Yes.
But they also can't travel home to their country. So they're kind of in between laws. They're not protected by anything.
Yeah.
And they build a really strong network in our city. With people who could support them on all kind of rights, so give them law support.
Yeah.
A doctor helps them with medicine.
Oh, wow, okay.
So inspired by that, I wanted to raise awareness on the privileges that we have and how we take them for granted.
Okay.
And how we should actually, how we have to protect them in order to not lose them.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So what's the plan? This is going to be on Kickstarter. What sort of time scale do you think you'll be looking at for that? How long?
So Quality Beast launched their first game, Sea Sabine, in January successfully. So we want to first manufacture and bring that out to everyone.
Yep.
And then the second in the line is Towers of the Sun by Stefan Bruckmann, abstract 3D strategy game.
Yep.
And after that, we will launch.
Okay. Gives you lots of time to play test and get everything working exactly as you want then.
Yes, yeah, and because the theme is very sensitive, we want to take enough time to really to let the theme drain through all of the mechanics.
Okay.
And
Okay, cool, that's great. Thanks very much for telling us about the game and wish you all the best.
Thanks for stopping by. Thanks.
So after Quality Beast, we went around the corner and once again ran into the guys from Blue Donut Studios. We actually got a chance to have a proper game of Line this time. We both really enjoyed this.
Yeah. It was good fun.
Yeah, and we both ended up buying a copy.
Yep. It was only, it was quite cheap, so.
Yeah, was it £12?
Yeah, that's right.
And it was well worth it, you know. You basically have a line in the middle, which is all of the various obstacles that you've got to get over with your skateboard. And then there's a drafting round where one more than the number of players cards will go out with various skateboarding moves on them. And you've got to try and match up. There's a colour on the top and bottom of the cards, which has to match up with the colour on the obstacle. But also there's red, green and blue lines that go through the cards, and you want to try and make as long a chain of the same color as you can, because they act as a multiplier, so you get more points at the end of the round, at the end of the game. So yeah, really really like that. It's simple rules, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you have to think about it quite a lot.
Yeah, and they were also playtesting the expansion there as well, so we had a chance to chat to Adam and Marcus. Adam, the designer, Marcus, who does all the art, but also, I think, runs Blue Donut Studios. So, again, we've got another interview here, so let's listen to that. So I'm here with Adam and Marcus from Blue Donut Studios, and they're showing off Line, the skateboard game. Hi, chaps, thanks for joining us.
That's quite all right.
Adam, first, you're the designer, so why don't you tell us a bit about what got you into making a game about skateboarding?
A few years ago now, I went to a game jam for the release of a skateboarding computer game called Olly Olly. During it, the requirement was to make a game within 48 hours about skateboarding.
Yep.
And previously, I'd made computer games and stuff at game jams, and I thought, I'm going to mix it up. And I turned up with a bunch of cards and some Sharpies and just went at it and eventually came up with the core system behind this.
Yep.
It's been through a bunch of iterations and a bunch of changes and artwork and so on since then, and now we're at the point of getting it printed and out and released and into the world.
Cool. So we've had a quick play of it, really like it. Obviously all of the moves are real skateboarding moves.
Yep.
Are you much of a skateboarder yourself?
I am not. Okay. I cannot skateboard at all, but I can play Tony Hawk's. So that was the most of the inspiration of that sort of arcade style combos and ludicrous linking of tricks together to make a big silly combination of tricks.
So why don't you tell us a bit about the mechanics of the game and how it plays. So
it's based around card laying and connectors. So the idea is that each trick is got connectors at the top and bottom for attaching to environment cards. So when you go off ramp, you can only do air tricks. Additionally, there are connectors on the side of what kind of tricks you can go into from that.
Right.
So certain tricks will work well going into other types of tricks. So if you do a kick flip, you can then land it and go into a manual. Those kind of cards sort of thematically link together and physically link together with these connectors. The idea is you want to get the same type of connector on a big, long string because each one you have next to each other multiplies your score.
Yeah.
So you end up making just focusing down on a single type of connector and trying to make these big long tricks while competing with the other players in the drafting mechanic to get the cards you need to carry on.
Yeah, cool. So, again, we said it was really fun, but also the cards look great. Marcus, you did all the art on the cards. Are you an artist by trade or history?
Yeah, yeah. No, artist. I started out as a artist. I went to art school. And I got involved in commercial art, so I was a graphic designer up in London. And then took a break from that, ended up in software for quite a few years. And one of the reasons why we set up Blue Donut Studios is that we wanted to do art and we wanted to do games and we wanted to use technology.
Yeah.
That's why when we came up with the idea of doing a skateboard game, we thought it was a great opportunity to look at the culture of skateboarding and at the same time make it more accessible.
Yeah.
So the idea is not to be too hardcore skateboarding so that people can't... It needs to be legible. The cards need to be easy to read. We also have to think about colour blindness.
Yeah.
So we designed the cards in black and white to make sure the gameplay still works nicely. And obviously we need to make sure... it's something that we could take to different countries as well,
yeah.
So culturally it can be acceptable as well.
Cool. So, as well as Line, you've been playtesting the expansion this weekend. How's that been going?
Pretty well, actually. We've really nice to get people in and start to take notes and see how it plays with people who haven't just made the game themselves.
Yeah.
It's the intention behind the expansion is to add a bit more randomness and a bit more of... The original game is very much... one competition. This is meant to be messing around in the skate park, so it's called the skate park deck. And it's got stuff like getting sponsorships, being good at certain types of tricks, and generally giving you stuff to play around within the very rigid system that's in there from the beginning.
Cool. Well, if people want to know more, where should they go?
Well, they should go to bluedonutstudios.com.
Excellent. Thanks, chaps, for joining us, and all the best for the future.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the first thing we did on Sunday morning was head over to the Asmodee stand that was right in the back corner of Hall 1 in the hope of getting a game of Athul. However, somebody had already beaten us to it. So we happened to turn round and spot that there was a couple of people who were about to start playing Century Eastern Wonders and needed two more people. It just so happened that it was Aaron and his wife who we knew, so we sat down and invaded their table.
Yep.
And had a game of Eastern Wonders, which is the latest in the Century trilogy. This is number 2. You can combine it with Spice Road to make, I think it's called Century, Sand and Sea, something like that. But in Eastern Wonders, you have a little cargo boat and you have little warehouses that you can drop on tiles. And the idea is you move around. Each of the tiles has an action that you can do. So you swap, say, one high-cost spice cube for 3 slightly lower spice cubes, or 5 of the lowest for 1 of the highest, sort of thing. I believe the spices are all the same as they are in Spicer. So you've got yellow cubes, red cubes, green cubes, and brown cubes, which is ginger, chili, tea, and cloves. And as you move around, you can drop warehouses on the tiles. If you have a warehouse on a tile, you can do that action even if your boat is not on that tile. And the idea is you collect spices, little cubes, and you turn in contracts, which are at the ports. There were 4 ports when we were playing. And once you turn in your contract at a port, you get the little token for that contract, put it in front of yourself, and the game ends when somebody gets 4 contracts, which Matt managed to do.
I did.
I got to 3.
But I didn't win the game, though.
I can't remember who won the game. Was it Aaron?
It might have been Aaron. But there was a bit of consternation over the rules at one point. Is consternation the right word?
Probably.
Okay.
There was a little bit of confusion over the rules.
Yeah.
Aaron's excuse or defence was that he'd only been taught it the day before, and when he was taught it, the person who taught it to him got it wrong.
Yeah. Likely story.
Yeah. So I think we misused a couple of the tiles, like the extra points tiles.
Yeah.
We did some stuff in the wrong order, and then at which point, by the time we figured it out, we'd all done it, and at which point we just said, let's just leave that. And then I think we figured out later that you can't drop a warehouse and harvest, even though I know both me and Aaron had done that a couple of times. So we had sort of played it a bit squiffy, house rules. Nevertheless, it was great fun. And sadly, by Sunday, it already sold out because it sold out on Friday.
Yeah.
So now I believe I think it's on pre-orders now for general release. I've seen it in a couple of places, but only as a pre-order.
Yeah, the Century Games have always gone down really well, haven't they? Yeah, they were demoing them last year as well, the Spice Road one. And this one looks really, really good as well. I've never actually played either of them, it's on my list.
Yeah, later on Sunday, I picked up a copy of Century Golem Edition because it was going for cheaper than regular Spice Road. And the Golem Edition is just like a reuse of the theme. Sorry, a re-theme of Spice Road, which they reckon you can't put in with Eastern Wonders, but I'm sure you could force it to work. if it's just a re-theme, then it's all the mechanics are the same. I'm sure you can, push the two together somehow.
Never ever underestimate the power of brute force and ignorance.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Eastern Wonders is one of the takeaway wow factor ones, I think. It did really well, yeah.
So we then wandered back into Hall 2, and I wanted to take a look at Penguin Brawl, Heroes of Pentarctica. We got handed a flyer for this at one point, and I was looking through all the stuff I'd been given on Saturday night, and I thought, I wouldn't mind having a quick look at this. Unfortunately, the guys there didn't have any copies of the game to sell because they had a bit of a customs snafu. But we did have a chance to have a chat with them. So they are Team Custard Kraken, the people who make this game, which I thought was quite a funny name.
What a brilliant name.
Yeah, they said they were very proud of it. But we had a chance to chat with Charlie from Team Custard Kraken about Penguin Brawl. So, yeah, let's listen to that interview now.
So I'm here at the Penguin Brawl stand with Charlie from Team Custard Kraken.
Hello there. Yeah, we're very fond of it.
Yeah. And, I've come here to find out a bit more about Penguin Brawl, so why don't you tell us all about it?
Okay, so Penguin Brawl is a combat-based card game for 2 to 8 players, suitable for ages 10+. We reckon on average it takes about half an hour to 45 minutes. It does get longer the more players you have in the game. But the basic mechanics, the combat, they work a bit like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, that sort of thing. Simplified combat, simple, it does this much damage, it takes this much damage. Beyond that, it does play head-to-head very well, but in a 3 or more player game, so that you're not bored when you lose all your points and watching everyone else play, you can stay playing in the game, you just can't win anymore.
Right.
So at that point, you have nothing left to lose, and if anyone has made an enemy of you, you can make their life hell.
Yep.
What we find then is that the person who wins tends to deserve to win.
Yeah.
They played well, and they played nicely.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there is a strategic element to the game. Most of the cards have a secondary effect that comes into play depending on which penguins are on the board. Sometimes you have to have them. Otherwise, some of them can be anywhere.
Yeah.
And all of that is clearly written on the cards. Usually, it just sort of doubles. So, you know, where it says draw one card, you draw two. But there are exceptions to that. It's all on the cards, yeah. Really. There are several different types of cards as well. There are cards that give you extra abilities as a player yourself. Weapons and armor to boost the stats of your penguins. Curses, which affect everyone usually. There are some exceptions to that, but they are always negative and can completely change the balance of power.
Yep.
There are spells and instants. Spells you can only use on your own turn, and each one has its own unique effect. And instants you can use during anyone else's turn as well. So they can throw a spanner in the works sometimes. Yep. But yes, every single card is unique. 120 cards in the base game, and currently two small expansions of 30 cards each available.
Okay.
So.
And so you're going to be selling this online in the future?
Absolutely, yes. We unfortunately got stuck by customs and did not get our stock for this con, but we are getting it through tomorrow, so hopefully we'll be starting to sell things soon. Most of our stock is still on its way from China.
Yeah.
But we will be putting it online as soon as possible, probably late June, early to mid-July. It does depend on how long it takes the boat to get here.
Yeah.
But as soon as it is with us, it will be going on as many platforms as we can. We can put it on Amazon, yeah. eBay, our own website,
yeah.
anything that will let us put it on there, we will be selling it. The base game we're going to be selling at the moment. This may change. It's obviously subject to what costs are involved. But £15 for the base game, £7.50 for each of the expansions. Okay. So
that's pretty good. So if people want to find out more, social media and website address.
Absolutely, penguinbrawl.com is probably the main one. We are also on Facebook, various other things. We do have a couple of videos on YouTube at the moment. There's not a lot on there.
Social media, we're there.
Yeah. So basically, we've got all points covered. Some of them are a lot more active than others, obviously.
Yeah.
So there's only so much time in the day for two people.
Cool. Well, thanks very much, and I wish you all the best of luck. And have a great rest of the con.
Thank you very much. Nice speaking to you.
Next up, we ended up chatting to Paul Harris, who's the guy behind HandyCon, which is the convention that we've mentioned on this show before, which happens a couple of times a year, and also Scrumpy, which is a game I liked the look of last year as well, which he's still developing. And he was happy to talk to us again and do a quick interview. So let's have a listen to that.
So we're standing here at UKG with Paul from Invincible Games.
Hello.
And you're here with Scrumpy, and you're here to promote HandyCon.
Yep.
So let's start with HandyCon, I guess. That's been going for a while now.
Two years. So 2 years ago, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't even an idea. And I was sat gaming here in the Hilton. And I had one day where I didn't even attend the trade fair. I just played games the whole time in the Hilton. And I went, I wonder if I could replicate this part of the convention without the traders, without the trade fair.
Yeah.
So I found a hotel and I networked and spoke to people. And so, to my great surprise, 6 or 7 months later in January, we had 225 people turn up and play games for 3 days in the hotel. And so I thought, I was going to do it once a year. And people were saying, well, when's the next one? When's the next one? So I spoke to the hotel and we managed to do another one in August.
Wow.
And that had 275 people. And so we did another one in January that had 330 people. The hotel was at bursting point. So we've now moved 8 miles down the road to the Maidenhead Holiday Inn. And we're expecting 500 people. And it's basically a festival of gaming.
Yeah.
I call it the biggest open gaming convention in the UK, because we don't have trade stands and things like that. We have the odd unpublished games, so people have a chance to play games that aren't out yet. We have a playtest zone, we have a design competition for designers, but what we don't do is have loads and loads of traders trying to sell their wares. It's about bringing your games. We've got a huge games library to borrow games, and it's about the people playing games in advance, but we try and be as inclusive as we can. We want people to come and meet people and people to feel comfortable coming on their own.
Yeah.
We try and actively help people who are anxious or things like that. So being a teacher, I'm very outgoing and gregarious. So I'm willing to go up and say, look, if you're anxious, come and see me, because I'm quite friendly and things.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the introductions to people. You don't need to sort of go out and cross that threshold of meeting new people. I'll do that for you. I'll get you into a game. I'll run the game. You don't even have to speak to people for the first bits.
Yeah.
And then we found people who I've come back and back and back and said, well, I'm seeing people now who are my friends through Handicon that yeah. I didn't even know. They come from the other side of the country. So yeah. That's what Handicon's all about.
Cool.
So the next one's in August the 10th to 12th.
Yep.
And January the 20th to 22nd in 2019.
Cool. I've got to ask about the name then. How did you come up with Handicon as a name?
I love the fact that basically it the first one was at the Handycross Roundabout, right. Which is just outside High Wycombe. It's a roundabout called the Handycross Roundabout.
Yeah.
So I went with Handicon because it was snappy and it worked. We're now no longer at the Handycross Roundabout, but I'm not changing my name ever.
No.
So just like some of the other conventions that are out there, which started in one place and then have moved, we're now still going to be the Handycon because it's handy for me because I live in Maidenhead now, so
yeah.
It's very convenient.
So you're also here with Scrumpy, the deck building game about cider.
Yep.
So people who listen to our podcast know we back a lot of games on Kickstarter, so that's good because this is going to be on Kickstarter.
Yep.
I have a thing about games that involve food and drink, so
yep.
That's also that. And the only alcohol I drink is cider.
Okay.
So for me, this is the ideal game. So why don't you tell us all a bit about that?
So as a little thing, I will mention first of all, I no longer drink, but if I do, it's always cider.
Yep.
I used to drink way more than I do now. But I came up with this idea for a game, and I wanted to turn it, a game where you can turn apples into cider, wood into barrels, and fill barrels with cider and sell it.
Yeah.
And I came up with this idea of a deck manipulation game. So it started out as a deck builder, but I realised quite early on that I didn't want the same. In a deck builder, you're kind of accumulating cards pretty much every round.
Yeah, yeah.
In my game, you accumulate maybe two or three more workers during the whole game. It's more about managing where the workers are, because your 15 workers that everyone starts with
yeah.
are manipulated, because on the back of the cards are the resources of apples, wood, barrels and cider, so your workers will also be flipped over and go into your storehouse and serve as those resources as well.
Yeah.
So one thing I was keen to do is it's more about managing which cards you use, when you use them and manipulating them.
Yeah.
The second thing that makes it very different is I used to get very frustrated with games like Dominion. I love Dominion, but if I just I'd set up a lovely deck and then I just bad card hand,
yeah.
couldn't do what I wanted to do,
yeah.
and the person next to me gets the perfect hand and is able to do everything.
Yeah.
So what I decided to do is we have a list of different actions that you can perform yourself. They are always slightly less efficient than the workers who are specialists in that area.
Yeah.
But it means that I can just use two of the cards of my five in my hand.
Right.
And instead, choose one of the actions so I can timely... You sacrifice efficiency, but you gain being able to do things at the right time for you to be able to always be able to do something to progress you forward.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 45-minute game, and one of the final things that makes it different is some of the cards have a keeping out symbol, which means the cards can stay from round to round. The benefit being, you know you're going to have that card in your hand next round.
Yeah.
The negative being, you're going through your deck slower, so any upgraded cards that you've purchased using your recruiter come round less frequently.
Right.
So it's a trade-off there. And so I've got several things about it that I think are different. My artist is a daughter of a friend of mine. She's 14 years old, still
wow,
at school.
Okay.
And as you'll be able to testify to your listeners,
yep.
it's some of the art is fantastic. I am massively passionate about inclusivity, and so one of my biggest things, because I've got 15 different characters, I want 15 different genders, minorities,
yeah.
I want a character in a wheelchair, I want to have representative of everyone who might play the game
yeah.
is represented among the characters, and I also want to subvert stereotypes, so I actively insisted I wanted my woodcutter to be female, I didn't want her to be a female who had... lewdly dressed or inappropriately dressed, if that's a more appropriate phrase.
I understand what you mean.
And so that's a passion for me. So this is one of the reasons I'm kickstarting it myself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a publisher of many, many games. I'm going to be a designer who designs through other people.
Yeah.
But what I'm really passionate about here is I wanted to do something a bit different. So when my Kickstarter campaign is going to be slightly different, and by that what I mean is my artist, being 14 years old, one of the stretch goals, or some of the stretch goals, are going to be related to her getting a higher percentage and
right,
things like
okay,
that.
Yeah.
So, which some people have come to me and said, "What?" But we want all stretch goals to be more stuff for us. And some people have said to me, That's amazing. I love the idea of an emotional stretch goal rather than just a different card backs and things.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and do different things with it and make it what Kickstarter used to be about funding a project that's a passion project of someone rather than just a sales platform. So this is what I'm doing. I have now talked at you for about 10 minutes. I do apologise.
7 minutes. So you're all right. Don't worry. So if people want to find out more about you, about HandyCon, the game, where can they go?
Okay, so HandyCon has got a website, www.handycon.co.uk. I am Paul Fronsdorf-Harris. I'm quite active on Facebook and BGG. If you want to find more, I'm Bonobo Gamer on BGG. You can find my blog, which I publish every Monday, which is where I discuss a new mechanic I've come up with for a game. So I'll review what. So the last one I just did, I was looking at weather, and I was discussing three games that I think do weather very well and an innovative mechanic on how you could do weather in a game. So rather than discussing a whole game idea, I discuss a specific mechanic you could use in a game. I'm on BGG there, like I say. Scrumpy is also on BGG, so you could go on there and find Scrumpy, find out more information, and it's also on Facebook. So if you swipe Scrumpy Game, you can find out more information, see some of our artwork, and follow the project.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for talking to us, mate. Really appreciate it. And best of luck for the future.
Thank you very much.
So, after we'd had a chat with Paul, we were just wandering, and we got accosted by a necromancer of some description.
Yes, offering for us to spin the wheel of doom.
Yeah, and I won a free sticker.
Yay.
And then the necromancer told us about his game, which he was showing, which was Roll Quest, which... actually, if he hadn't have stopped us, I probably wouldn't have looked at, but I'm glad we did, because actually I really like the look of it. It's a light role-playing card game, social game, and everyone gets roles to play, you know, from the cards in the game. But everyone also gets hidden personalities that they have to perform, but also... you can play curses on the other players to make the game more difficult for them. So, like, for example, you've got your personality, and then I can play a card on you that says you've got to speak in a certain accent, or you've got a rhyme, or something like that, you know. So it's a fun, like, social party game. And it's good improv stuff, because, you know, I like Whose Line Is It Anyway, and all that kind of thing, and it reminds me a lot of that. So this game's by Hercules Game Studios. And the chat we spoke to was Phoebus. Again, he was happy to be recorded, so here's a quick chat with him.
Okay, so we're here at Hercules Game Studios, where we're going to have a look at Roll Quest. So why don't you tell us all about it?
Yeah, so Roll Quest is a light social role-playing card game. And I know that's a lot of adjectives, so let me try and explain it. Roll Quest... it's for 3 to 6 players, and we're working on an 8-player expansion right now as well. It lasts about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And the way it works is each player gets one character, and you have a mix of fantasy characters. So you have the wizard, the necromancer, but you also might get a kind of more everyday character, like the innkeeper or the blacksmith.
Yeah.
The characters move around the city, which is represented by these... little cards, the tavern, the town hall, and when two characters meet together, they have to have a role play interaction.
Yeah.
So you have a sun timer, and for 1 minute you have to act in character and speak to the other
person.
Right.
Okay.
A third player usually sets up the scene by setting a scenario. So the blacksmith goes to the tavern and has been going every day and not paying for the beer.
Yeah.
And the innkeeper is not happy about that. Something like that.
Yeah.
Now, both characters have a hidden personality that they get from these personality cards, and they need to role-play the personality.
Right.
In the end of the 1 minute, the players try to guess each other's personality, and then if they don't guess it right, the other players get a chance as well.
Right, okay.
Every time you guess someone's personality or someone guesses yours, you get some goblin heads, which is the cryptocurrency of the future, I like to call it. And in the end of the game, whoever has the most goblin heads wins.
Okay, cool.
And to make it more interesting, we have a number of curses that you can put on the other players. There's the curse of Julius Caesar, where they have to speak about themselves in third person.
Okay.
There's the curse of the linguist, where you have to avoid a specific word. The curse of the flamingo, where you have to stand on one leg during the interaction. So there's quite a bit of silliness going on.
I quite like this one, The Curse of Babylon, where the target player has to speak with an accent of your choice.
Yeah, so. I know, this has been quite a tricky one. I think the most difficult one is The Curse of Rhyming.
Yeah, I can imagine. Rhyme,
which is pretty hard.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much RoleQuest. The game is finished. We've done more than 80 playtesting sessions, so the rules are almost final. We're going to go live on Kickstarter in the beginning of July.
Yep. So if people want to find out more, obviously they can keep an eye out on Kickstarter, but is there a website, social media that they can go
to? Yeah, so our website is after-london.com, which is our first game that we created, and then /RoleQuest, or if you go to after-london.com, there will be a link for RoleQuest as well.
Okay.
And we're Hercules Game Studios. We're on Twitter, Facebook,
that's cool.
Snapchat, I'm kidding.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, mate. It's been great. And, really look forward to seeing how it goes for you. Best of luck for the future.
Cool, thank you.
Before we move on from Hercules, the guys showed us what they got from the Starbucks as well. Because, normally they write the names on the cups. They'd actually written Wizard and Necromancer on them because of the outfits they were wearing. So, I thought that was quite funny. So, moving on from them, we then went and had a look at another game I'd seen on a flyer, which was Witless Wizards from Drawlab Entertainment, which was just basically a light battle game with cards where your wizards casting spells on each other.
Yeah.
And it was nothing really heavy to it, but you have a weapon, an armor, and a sort of magical charm. And you draw cards from the deck, and if you want to, you can use one of them on you, or you can use them on the other players to make them weaker. And then everyone starts off at 20 health, and you just attack each other until you're the last one standing.
Yeah, okay, it's like a Wizards Battle Royale.
Yeah. Basically.
Cool.
That's coming to Kickstarter this month, I believe, so if that sounds like it might be up your street, just keep an eye open for that.
So next, as we were wandering around, we were grabbed and taken for a quick demo of a game called Footprint, which is on Kickstarter now, and they've already hit their primary funding goal. And Footprint is a little game about trying to de-pollutionize the world. And thankfully, Owen agreed to have a chat with Matt, so he can explain this a little bit better than I can. So let's have a quick listen to that.
So we're here with Owen, who's going to tell us all about Footprint, the sustainability game.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, mate.
Thank you. So Footprint is a game which I've designed. It's been under development for several years. It's now on Kickstarter. The aim of the game is to get pollution off Earth. So the player that gets the most pollution off is the winner. But also every go we turn over a footprint card. If we run out of footprint cards before we've got all the pollution off, then everyone loses as well. So it's a semi-cooperative game where you're playing against the clock, also looking to be the best person as well, get the most pollution off. On your turn as well, you also answer a bonus question, which will help you in the game if you get it right. We've got three levels of cards. We've got beginner, that's aimed at children, medium, adults, and advanced, those eco warriors that are out there.
Oh, we played with medium yesterday and I was terrible, so...
terrible.
Yeah.
Well, it's a 1 in 3 chance of getting it right.
That's true.
So even if you don't know, then you can guess, and of course you can maybe learn a few things as well.
Yeah. Noticed on all of the... every player gets credit cards as well, which they use to, perform the actions or whatever. A lot of them have got famous people in the green space on them as well.
That's right, yeah. So I spent a long time looking at different environmentalists around the world. Obviously there's some that people know well, like David Attenborough.
Yeah.
But there's other ones as well from other parts of the world which people maybe don't know about, and I thought it would be a great platform to raise awareness about that.
So, I mean, I'm guessing raising awareness is your main aim with this game.
That's it, yeah. It's an educational game, so I think there's some really interesting and also kind of worrying things about environmental issues out there.
Yeah.
So I thought a game would be a really good way to raise awareness, also make it fun and engaging for people. I've got an idea of taking this to kind of schools as well, yeah, and also families as well. So kind of education is a really big part of it.
It's interesting because this isn't it's the only game about pollution here, obviously. But there's also a couple of other games I've seen that have to do with data privacy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of the things that are going on, people are taking inspiration from those to make games about them. So.
I guess it's a really creative market. I've seen games on everything.
Yeah, true.
I saw the privacy one. And I thought that was really clever as well. Yeah. So it's great to see games branching out and doing other areas as well.
Okay. So the game's on Kickstarter now. How long is it, the campaign live for?
It's for the whole month, so it's up to the end of June.
Yep.
So we're down as Footprint World Edition on Kickstarter. So I'm pleased to say we've already hit our target.
Good.
So it's going to happen. So if anyone wants to go on and pledge, then you will get a copy.
That's great. Well, I wish you all the best and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for your time.
So after we spoke to Owen on the Footprint stand, one of his volunteers recommended that we pop a couple of stands down to go and speak with a young lady called Lily, who was only 12 years old and had designed the game that she and her family were there to demo and show to the expo. So, yeah, we popped down to Double L Games and Matt had a chat with Lily. Let's have a quick listen to that now.
So we're sitting here at Double L Games with Lily, the designer of Build. Hi, Lily, how are you?
I'm alright, thank you.
So before we start, everyone should know this is your game and you're 12 years old,
yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Build is all about?
Build is about deals, diplomacy and international development. And so you start off with a country that's been ruined and devastated by the last government.
Right.
And you slowly build up your country so it's thriving and prosperous, and but you can be set back by the events, things like natural disasters and terrorist attacks.
So
that's sort of the gist of the game.
Okay, cool. How long has it taken you to get the game to the point you are at now though?
About a year.
A year, okay, yeah. That's not too bad. And what made you decide I'm gonna design a game?
It was actually geography homework.
Okay.
And so I played it with my dad and he was like, this is really good, you should do something about it.
Yeah.
And then, so then we got some backers.
Yeah.
Who work in international development in Africa.
Right.
And they were like, this is really good, we want to back it. And then they've bought 100 copies of the game that isn't even finished yet.
Okay.
And that was when it was like, still like bits of paper.
Yeah.
And so yeah, been really lucky.
Okay, that's cool. What's the plan to do? Are you going to take it to Kickstarter or are you?
Yeah. So I'm going to take it to Kickstarter and hope that, you know, it gets lots of attention and funding.
Yeah. So is your family board gamers generally then? So yeah, okay,
yeah,
so that's
fine.
Okay. That's cool. Because that would have been weird if you'd have just done that.
No, that's why it wasn't. The game wasn't like, a lot of people were making snakes and ladders type games.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it got, it was not snakes and ladders and it was something a bit more.
A bit more complex.
Because I've been playing these sorts of games.
That's cool.
So yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, if people want to find out more, where can they go? Do you have a website address?
Yes, so you can go to our website at www.doublelgames.co.uk.
Yep.
Or follow us on social media at Double L Games.
Okay, cool. Well, I wish you all the best of luck and hope it goes great for you.
Thank
and
you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
So thanks very much to Lily for having a chat with us. And after that, we were sort of wandering and I happened to wander past the stand for Immortality, which was a game that I had put on my maybe list. And I thought, well, you know, we're here, why not? So we had a chat with Nikki, who is the designer of Immortality. And he he explained the basics of the game. So the idea is that Zeus is a bit bored and he wants to have a competition. So he's created a labyrinth and you as mortals, if you can defeat the labyrinth and Zeus himself, then he will give you the gift of immortality. We didn't manage to stop for a game, and we were quite busy trying to get our last few interviews in. So although we didn't get a chance to sit down and demo Immortality, Nicky is a local games designer, so we'll hopefully be catching up with him a little bit later on. And he's also going to be at the Board Games Bash in Birmingham later on this month. So then shortly after that, we had a text message saying, "I'm on my way back," from Gareth. Or words to that effect. And then a quick message saying, "Haha, I've got a demo at Solomon Kane. There's space, come and play." So we shot over from Hall 2 back to Hall 1, diverting briefly to buy Matt an expansion box to Linky.
Oh, yeah.
And got there, and there were still seats. So we had a demo of Solomon Kane.
Yeah,
which involves miniatures.
It does indeed. I actually got Ray to finally play a miniatures-based game, which is quite good. I was eyeing up Solomon Kane based on Ray's recommendations on Friday, and couldn't get near it. I walked past it on Friday morning about 10 o'clock, and the Mythic guy said, "Oh, look, do you want a game?" I said, "Yes." And then my friends walked off, and I thought, I'll come back later. Of course, came back later and couldn't get near it. And I did see a friend of mine playing it on Friday afternoon, and he declared it was awesome. So I was quite keen to give it a go. So yeah, I managed to come back on Sunday afternoon, thanks to the my lovely mother-in-law looking after my son for a couple of hours, so I could disappear back up to the expo. And I've thought about it quite a lot over the last couple of days. I liked the mechanics. I thought it was decent. I'm not sure it's a game that I want to buy yet, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I liked the idea that you didn't directly control Solomon as such. I like the fact that you all played the fates that surround him. So yeah, if you're not aware of the game, it's a game where obviously you play Demon Hunter Extraordinaire Solomon Kane as he wanders around and basically fights evil and investigates creepy goings on and saves people. But you don't really play him. You play the fates that surround him and try to guide him and protect him from all the nastiness that happens around him on the board. I think it probably suffered a bit because of the expo, in all fairness. I think if you were sitting around your house with a glass of wine and some creepy music playing, I think it would work really well. And I did enjoy the game we played. I'm not sure how you guys found it.
No, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It's very unique. I don't think I've ever played anything quite like it.
I
quite enjoyed it. I like the fact that you weren't playing against each other. So you had to sit there and think about who was best to play first, second, third, fourth, based on who had what actions and how likely it was you were going to be able to achieve those actions. So I think I like that, because it's a co-op. And I do like the ability to just sort of sit and have a chat about what's going on sometimes, as opposed to everybody sort of sitting in silence, thinking about their own moves and their own hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did like that.
It's also one of those games I felt that normally those kind of games, everyone's out there for themselves. You know, everyone's kind of like cat movement, looking for their own little heroic moment. You chuck a bunch of miniatures in a game on a game board, and it's a dungeon crawler, and everyone's trying to be the hero and doing their alpha male bit. This game doesn't really support that at all. You won't last 2 seconds if you try that. I thought that was quite nice. But yeah, I thought the cooperative element was done really well. It is unlike I haven't played a system like that before, which is quite interesting. The other thing I would say is I thought the Kickstarter price they were quoting was a little bit wow. I'd be interested to see what's in the Kickstarter for that much money.
Yeah, it was a bit on the high end, which is generally what puts me off mini games to begin with.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it's a natural side product, byproduct of being a miniature based game. You normally get slightly elevated costs. That one's I think it's $120 for the base pledge. It's quite a lot. But yeah, I liked it. I'm glad it's coming to retail, and it gives me more time to think about whether or not I want to pick it up later on. I probably won't do the Kickstarter because I don't think I can afford it too much, to be honest, at the moment. But I quite liked it. It was good.
Cool.
Awesome.
You also on Sunday got a chance to play a demo of Lifeform from Hall or Nothing.
Yeah, and actually this is the game I literally came back to the expo to play. I was wandering around on Friday. I may have actually backed this on Kickstarter, backed it a few months back. The idea of the game is, for those that don't know about it, it's there's two alien-based games that are out this year. There's Nemesis and there's Lifeform. Nemesis, it would ordinarily be the kind of game I'd be naturally attracted to because of the sheer amount of miniatures that are in it, which look absolutely brilliant. And I did back it briefly and then sort of withdrew myself. Lifeform is a similar kind of game. You're playing a pirated version of Alien. You are survivors on a ship, and one player plays the alien, and the alien is basically hunting you down. So your aim is to get, as the crew, is to wander around the ship, get the items that you need onto the rescue craft, and get off the ship in one piece, preferably before the alien eats you in the face. It was good. I got a chance to sit down with Mark Chapman, the guy who created it, and have a quick go. It was only a quick go, but it was great. It was the mechanics are really sound. It's all done via deck building elements and card based elements. It's put some really nice mechanics in there, so that even if you die, there's no actual player elimination. You can come back as the ship's cat, which is interesting, or you can come back as the mainframe, which controls the ship. Even when you die, you're never really out of the game, which is nice. And the alien itself is a really interesting creature to fight against, because just like in the film Alien, it's completely invulnerable. You can never kill it. It's constantly hunting you. It's constantly chasing around the ship. But it's done in such a way that you can escape. It's fair. That's really good. I only got a very brief demo, but it was really good. It's one I'm really happy I backed on Kickstarter.
So while you were doing that, Gareth, me and Matt went off for a quick last-minute shop, as obviously that was the last hour of the show. Boo. So was there anything else that you spotted, Joe, over the weekend that you liked, the Gareth?
There was two other games. One was Legends Untold, which was finally there in its complete format and looking really nice. I don't know if anybody else has seen that one. I've had it on my back list for over a year now, and it was nice to chat to the creator and see the finished product, and it's looking amazing, to be honest with you. It's taken a while to get to this stage, to be honest, it has, but the work is evident. It's clearly a passion project for them, and it's nice to see it coming together, and it's not going to be much longer now, which is even better.
Long-time listeners of the Offline Gaming Podcast will, of course, recall that we interviewed Kevin a couple of years ago after first meeting him at UKGE 2016.
And what a lovely fellow he is. He even gave me a piece of his own shortbread. That's how nice he was. He walked up and said, "Have some shortbread." It's practically a food. It's practically a health. It's Scottish. It's got to be good food, I think he said at the time, which is really nice. And it was great. I'm just really sad that I didn't get a chance to sit and play it on Friday because I was running around. And then by the time I got back on Sunday, I didn't have enough time, which is a shame. But nice to meet him properly. I'm really happy about it, which is really, really cool. The other game, which I got a very brief look at, and I had a chance to play with the author of the game, and I didn't, and I'm really annoyed at myself for not doing it, was Escape Tales: The Awakening.
I saw that. I thought that looked quite interesting as a concept.
Yeah, it looks awesome. It's an escape room based game with horror elements, which is right on my street. I didn't get said. That's kind of all I know about it. The artwork looks really stunning, and it's unlike most escape based games where it's timed. This is a story driven one, so you can sort of play it at your own pace, which is really quite nice. There's quite a lot of that stuff coming out now with like the Seventh Continent and like Escape the Dark Castle sort of create your own adventure games, which are obviously always in fashion, which is nice. But I really quite like the idea of it, and the storyline seems quite interesting. And that's one I would. If I could go back in time for Friday and play it, I would. But unfortunately, I didn't get time. But that was the other one I was really excited by to see.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. I also bought some games that I was looking for ages, like Sword and Sorcery, which I've been dying to get for ages.
I think you spent more than we did, but
a little bit more. I also picked up Role Player, which I've been dying to get for about a year now, and that's great fun. I've really enjoyed that.
Awesome.
Okay, so that's our UKGE roundup episode all done. Thanks for joining us, Gareth. It's been a pleasure to have you again.
Thank you very much for inviting me on again. Much appreciated.
We'll talk more about the games that we purchased at the Expo in our next episode, where hopefully we'll have had a chance to play some of them. But for now, it's our usual outro, so everyone knows how to find us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TogCast.
We're also available on Facebook if you just search for The Offline Gamer, or alternatively, if you go to facebook.com/TogCast.
You can listen to our podcast at soundcloud.com/offlinegamer, or you can find it on iTunes and most other good podcast platforms by just searching for The Offline Gamer.
If you'd like to drop us an email, ask us a question, send us a request, you can at offlinegamerpodcast@gmail.com. Or there is a contact form on our website, which is
www.offlinegamer.co.uk, where you can find all that we've just mentioned, and also our videos and everything else that we ever do all goes on there. So thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time for episode 31. That's been The Offline Gamer. Bye.
Bye. Bye.